You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier, Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
Hey, it's that time of the weekend, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogotá, Colombia, 2,600 meters close to the stars, and dreaming that I were in Mompox, in the heat of Mompox, because while we have sunny mornings in Bogotá, it's getting very chilly at night. Those of you who know the city up here will know what it's like. Now, I want to draw attention to something that happened on Sunday. Well, I think it was Sunday morning, or was it Saturday morning? My friend Richard Emlin, the journalist, photographer, director, editor, and of course now the owner and director of the city paper Bogota, for which I write a monthly opinion piece. He saw, in his words, in front of his eyes, what he can only describe as being an unidentified flying object. He was on his deck one morning, on Saturday morning, having a customary coffee and cigarette in the morning, and there was something a figure of eight shaped zipping across the skyline between various points of Bogota. He got out his super big lens, telescopic lens as a photographer. I was able to spy it from afar and photograph it. I have to say that the photographs, you know, with all due respect, don't detail a great deal, but he is standing by his word, and fair enough, fair play to him for this sighting and for, of course, announcing it, you know. I mean, what are your experiences in this field of life? I don't know. I have none whatsoever. So I just find that quite fascinating. You know, I've heard tales and I've read of tales, you know, here and there. And of course, we all know about that area in New Mexico and everything and all the cover-ups and so on and so forth. But to have someone who is personally known to me to have made a declaration of you know, with such profound sincerity, it must have some type of truth to it. So, very interesting to hear from that. Now, aside from that, what are we going to be talking about this week? Well, there's two real issues talking about this week. First of all, is the 9th of April, 1948. Very important date in Colombian history, and it's not facetious of me to say that it's not just important in Colombian history, it's important in my history. Stay tuned to find out why. What else do we have? No, we have... I'm going to develop a thought process around the Bogotazo, so the 9th of April, 1948, and what it means a little bit. And, of course, because my son was born on the 9th of April, 2015. So, therefore, his birthday will always correspond with that of the Bogotazo. And with that in mind, I've been, you know, very much involved in the health insurance industry this last week as I find out how to cover my bills in this private hospital service. So we're going to explore a little bit about health insurance and health policies here in Colombia, which is kind of a necessary evil, as you would well imagine, if you're living here as an expat, foreigner, so on and so forth. Of course, if you're in a multinational, things are different for you, but if you're not, if you're an independent worker, a freelancer like myself, you know, you might want to tune in. And of course, anyone out there thinking of moving to Colombia will want to know about the ins and outs of this. It's something that you don't really get to understand until you've been through it yourself. Kind of crazy, incredibly prohibitive, and incredibly costly too if you don't get it right. So, with that in mind, I'm going to sign off, of course. Thank you for your emails this week. Thank you for your tweets as well. You can always get in touch with us. It's columbiacalling@gmail.com. Website, columbiacallingradio.com. Facebook, Columbia Calling. Twitter, @ColumbiaCalling. Now, I'm going to leave you here. And I hope you enjoy the show. So, don't turn off your radios. Keep it tuned in. And we'll be right back after these short messages. Thank you.
Corriente con chinchorro y atarraya. La...
And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall here in Bogota, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And, well, yes, you've got me again this week. Not because there's a dearth of interviewees out there and you have to listen to my prattling on for the next 40-odd minutes. No, it's not that. I've been incredibly busy this week. And those of you listening to this podcast will know it's no secret at all. But I was expecting a child. We were expecting a child, Alba and I, and I can tell you that, yes, on the anniversary of the Bogotazo, the 9th of April, 2015, our little son was born. So that's the red-letter day for us, and of course, we go about changing, let's say, the representation of that date in our minds. Only my sister-in-law, the political scientist who works for the mayor's office and victims here in Bogota, was the one who said, oh no, is there any way you can bring it forward, or is there any way you can make it delay so that he's not born on the 9th of April? But what is the importance of that date? For those of you perhaps not up to speed on Colombian history, well, it was 9th of April, 1948, was the Bogotazo, as it were. Much of downtown Bogota was razed to the ground, resulting from the assassination by Mr. Roa of Jorge Eliécer Gaitán, so the liberal political leader, the presidential candidate, 1948. I haven't read enough to say if I knew that he was going to win the elections, but certainly he seemed popular. And yes, he was shot right downtown Bogota on the corner of the Avenida Jiménez and Carrera Séptima. So if you're visiting Bogota and you're walking around and you've just come out of the Gold Museum there in the Parque Santander, you're just across the way from the Gold Museum Transmilenio, you'll see a big building on the corner, one which was the central bank, the Banco de la República, obviously built post-1948, and another one on the Kitty corner, which is the old El Tiempo building, where formerly the El Tiempo newspaper was based, but now the El Tiempo sort of TV station. Anyway, opposite that, where there used to, I don't know if the McDonald's is still there or not. Now, it always upsets me a little bit to think of a McDonald's right in such a historic place, but then that's my opinion. Anyway, right next door to that McDonald's, or whatever's on the corner opposite El Tiempo, you'll see all of these plaques placed there. And it was that day, 9th of April, 1948, where whilst Gaitán was giving a speech, he was a rabble-rouser. He was not a revolutionary, if we think about his politics in today's terms. He was just different. And of course, you know, it was a different time. It was still incredibly violent in Colombia at this point in time. But of course, statistics and figures had not been collated of the deaths between liberals and conservatives and you know, Creoles or Spaniards or new immigrants and of course, Aboriginal Indians here. No, these figures just didn't exist. It was the Wild West. You go beyond the cities, even the cities themselves, you go beyond the cities, and even today when you travel, you get that feeling of how far out of civilization you go when you go just an hour beyond Bogota, when the roads become, you know, rutted, and perhaps these places then you know, suffer from power outages or lack of running water. A lot of things haven't changed in a lot of parts, so it's very interesting, especially when you go as far as sort of, let's say, Montbos, where you know, of course, where my little hotel is. I mean, you are way out there. So anyway, so that's the date, that's the significance of it. And many people, you know, attribute the sort of like problems of today, the conflict, the FARC guerrillas, the ELN, the EPL, the M19, the Quintilame, all extending from this moment. And now I would hasten to add that you can't, as a political scientist myself, a conflict resolution specialist, I wouldn't say that this one event was, you know, representative of what is happening today. What it was is a spark. You understand, it's a spark in a tinderbox. Just like back in the colonial period when Llorente didn't want to lend his vase to a Spaniard for the arrival of the imperial delegation, and so he preferred to throw it on the ground, and that was the cry for independence. That was Llorente's vase. The museum is there on the corner of the Plaza de Bolívar, because that was the house. So you can find out a little bit more about Colombian history there as well, if you're interested in that. But it was a spark. These things that these are the things that sort of concentrate. And it's explosive. Colombia was on edge. Now, what happened in that 1948, of course, was it was a free-for-all. So the politicians, the rabble, it was, a settling of debts. And you had liberals killing conservatives, conservatives killing liberals to begin with, but then you also had the police and armed forces finishing off people that they felt needed to be disappeared. So, setting a dangerous and unpleasant precedent for what had happened in more contemporary times. And student leaders were targeted and so on and so forth. Now, it brings me back to a couple of weeks ago when I was talking about now a friend of mine, this gentleman born in 1919 in Mompós, Carlos Alemán Zabaleta, who very kindly gifted me his book, his memories of Mompós and being a politician in said period. And he was a student at the Universidad Nacional, so this sort of left-wing academic university down there at the end of the Calle 45 on Carrera 30. Great graffiti if you're interested in that kind of thing. But he was a student leader back at that time, a student of law, and he was targeted. He said that the security forces came for him, and he fled and sought asylum in the Venezuelan embassy, and they granted him asylum. And until everything died down, he did not leave the Venezuelan asylum. So, serious stuff, and especially for me, wonderful and inspiring to hear a tale such as this from someone still alive, because of course people are passing away. Now, he was, Carlos Alemán Zabaleta, was a friend of Gabo's, but later on, in their penniless years in Barranquilla and Cartagena and so on. But Gabo García Márquez, of course, was here during the Bogotazo as well, in those years that he writes about, of the drizzle and the grey and unfriendly nature of Bogotá. But Carlos Alemán Zabaleta and Gabo weren't friends at that time, because I wanted to ask about their relationship maybe during the Bogotazo, because of García Márquez was a liberal by definition, of course, and he had helped the ELN and other guerrilla groups to negotiate with the government in failed negotiations, but he was there. And of course he put himself into self-exile. He'd been exiled twice. Once he left from Colombia to the United States and was in New York, but because of his feelings about the Cuban Revolution, the New York Cubans threatened him, and he moved on to Mexico. So first it was he thought that he was going to come under questioning by the government of President Turbay at that time, and then so he left for New York, and then because of his friendship with Fidel Castro and his beliefs in the Cuban Revolution, he had to move from New York down to Mexico. So that's where he spent the latter part of his years, Mexico, and he flitted back and forth to Colombia. But there are still those here today, they're ultra conservatives, ultra right wing, who see him as an evil influence because of his political affiliations. But while I'm on the subject of Gabriel García Márquez, our book is out. Was Gabo an Irishman? Is out. You can just type that into Amazon. There it is. It's selling. We're very happy with it. People are giving great feedback. Please buy the book. It's not expensive on Kindle, and it's not expensive in its physical form. So you can find that on Amazon. So just go to your account and type in "Was Gabo an Irishman?" or type in "Richard McColl," and it will come up as one of the books. Or of course Victoria Kellaway or Caroline Doherty de Novoa, because we are the three editors and authors to it. And of course, my hats go off to all the other writers out there who helped contribute to this and make it what it is, because it is a great book. And initial responses are very positive. But while I'm on that, the official launch is at the Bogota Book Fair, so it's the end of this month, the end of April, beginning of May, and we will be in the García Márquez Pavilion at Corferias at the Book Fair. So big news for us. We have been invited to promote the book, sell the book at the Gabriel García Márquez Pavilion, because there is no internationally invited country this year, because it's 1 year on from Gabriel García Márquez's death. So we are there in the Gabo Pavilion. One of us, some of us, any of us will be there talking about the book, signing, of course, explaining what it is and so on. It's very exciting for us to have this. It's very exciting to have gone through the process, the printers. At some point, I'll write a blog and that will be up on richardmccall.com. But as you can understand, I'm a little bit busy. And the next section of the show, I'm going to talk a bit more about the issues of what has been happening to me this week. But rest assured, my little son James, named after my unfortunately deceased little brother, James, who passed away many years ago now. Anyway, James Nicholas McCall is in good health. He is still in the hospital as I say this, but he's in good health. He was born the date of the Bogotazo, so of course, you know, being a proud father, I think he's destined for greatness, of course. And anyway, we're very happy, and it's been a huge weight off our shoulders, the 9 months of waiting. And of course, he's Anglo-Colombian, so we'll see what that kind of that background enables here in Bogota for a young child, and indeed in Mompox. So very exciting times for me and my family, and I know that those of you out there listening are wishing us all the best, and very many congratulations. I've had very nice emails from across the world, so again, those people who've written, thank you kindly for that. Richard Emblin, a special thank you for your flowers, for you and Maria Claudia, who are sending your flowers. It really wasn't expected, and what a wonderful gesture to the editor from the City Paper Bogota, that's www.thecitypaperbogota.com, who sent us flowers. Of course, I'm an opinion writer for that newspaper, and you can read my opinions on that. The most recent piece I have done is on the outrageous increases on sort of property taxes, annual property taxes that go on here in Colombia, but in Mompox they've been increased 300%. 300%. I mean, can you even imagine what that's going to be like to families of humble origins still living in the colonial palaces downtown in Mompox? Here in Bogota, they go up, in various regions, 15 to 20%, 25, 30%. You know, I was talking to a taxi driver the other day, and he goes, we'd accept 10%, we accept even up to 15%, but if we can't, it's a taxation without representation. If we don't see, changes to our roads, changes to the security, changes to the street illumination, changes to all these things, where is this money going? Where is it? And now, so what the problem is, I think that most people, a lot of people don't pay. And certainly in Mompox, for about 30 odd years, it really wasn't ever varied, the tax thing. So then to put it 300% in 1 year, I don't even know what my taxes are yet. And I'm not really willing to find out, but I do know that everybody's demonstrating in Mompox about these things, because surely a 300% increase should be staggered over time, no? To allow people to put their finances into order. And when I saw that one of these high and mighty bankers for the Bank of the Republic standing up there and saying, there's no reason why anyone can't pay, it's all about good bookkeeping and savings. Well, if we can't save because the value of our incomes is lower than the price increases for taxes and rent and everything else, how is this going to work? But anyway, I understand that the government needs to pay for a post-conflict. Everything seems to be pointed towards that. Santos is in Panama as we speak. Well, it'll come back now, but up there at the Cumbre de las Americas, and everybody's backing peace and everybody's backing Colombia, and this is great. But remember, you're going to strangle the middle class, and it's the middle class that have brought this country up over the last 10, 15 years. It's the middle class who are still here, absolutely hammer and nails and tongs making the country work. So remember that, Santos, President Santos, when you, order for greater income over this time. We are suffering. And we are being strangled on these taxes. Nobody likes taxes, but there are those of us from other parts of the world, and of course in Colombia, who understand that taxes need to be paid. And taxes need to be raised for obvious benefits and improvements to the country. This is clear. This is absolutely standard. But let's see the result of our tax increases. And let's have, reasonable tax increases. Does that make sense? Let me know what you think. Get in touch. I'm Richard McCall. You can always contact us at columbiacalling@gmail.com. And, of course, on Twitter, at Columbia Calling, Facebook, Columbia Calling. Remember that our book's out. That's Was Gabo an Irishman in Amazon. You can buy a hard copy and the Kindle version. I'd love to hear from people. I've had some great emails this week, which I will share with you later on in the show, just in the next part of the show. And, yes, we'll talk a little bit more about the health system here in Colombia, because that has been an adventure for me in this last week with the birth of my son. I'm Richard McCall. This is Columbia Calling. Please don't go away, and we'll be right back with more fascinating stuff about Colombia. And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall, and I'm here in Bogota. I was talking in the last section of the show about, you know, a bit about history, the 1948 Bogotazo, many people died, mass graves in the Central Cemetery. So, you know, if you were to do some reading about this, you'd find all sorts of different things. But it's a fascinating time in history, a very stark and horrifying time in history, Colombian's history. But anyway, why did they come around to the 9th of April, 1948? Well, my son James was born on this very day. So therefore, for us, it was our own McCall Torres Bogotazo. So I was talking about, you know, various things and rambling a little bit about taxes and so on. And last week's show was very well received with Beverly Cadogan. And again, my thank you to her for her time to talk to us, a legal expert, about the tertulia system here in Colombia. Now, tertulias are particularly complex and usually quite ineffective in truth. But, you know, anyone thinking of coming and living out here in Colombia needs to really think about the legal system and what they might be up against, in particular with their contracts and payment. You know, that you might end up with a company or, you know, a fly-by-night company who says they're going to get you a visa. Maybe they don't get you a visa, or maybe they don't pay you on time. Maybe they don't have the funds. But you need to know your rights with which you can then claim your benefits and claim your payment. Equally as important, I would suggest, is, of course, the health system. Now, if you're only coming over here to travel, you get, of course, some international health insurance, and you have it to travel with. You know, you get it to cover the clauses that obviously allow for Colombia, because I know that some countries still list Colombia as, you know, high risk. And we've had a mass increase in Germans in the last couple of years since Germany reduced the risk level of coming to Colombia, which then allowed the insurance agencies to, provide insurance and healthcare for Germans in Colombia at a lower cost. So anyway, that was very positive for Colombia in terms of being seen as less high risk, and of course, for an increase in Germans. But if you're coming to live here, it's a whole different kettle of fish. Now, if you are affiliated to a multinational company, you will have a fixer and a person, you know, your go-to guy in the office who will do all of this for you. If you are not, if you're an independent or independiente and you're on a visa like I was, the journalist visa, the temporal especial, things are a little different. Now, if you're going to get paid in, let's say, contract work as an independent employee, so like a freelance employee here in Colombia, you're going to need to pay into a social security fund. This is something that was completely foreign to me when I came here, and I never really thought about these things until I said, well, you know, I should probably have health insurance. I'm traveling all around the country. I'm in malarial areas, and some of you will know about my issues with malaria, dengue, hemorrhagic dengue, typhoid, and all the rest of them. I still need yellow fever to complete the bunch. But so that's called, you know, your social security, like the pay-in. It's not like a government social security war. It might be a government one. I mean, the technicalities of it are a mystery to me. But what is called is an EPS. Now, as a independent employee, you get in touch with one of these EPSs, and there's dozens of them out there. I'm with Allianz Salud, which is an affiliate of someone else, There is, I think Colseguros, there's Nueva EPS, there's all sorts of them out there, and they affiliate you, and they take an estimation of your monthly income, and it's a percentage that then should be paid each month. Now, my EPS payment is about 75,000 pesos a month. So we're looking at about, let's say, $30 a month into that. And I can pay online, which is one of those sweet relief in life that I don't have to queue up in a bank anymore for this one. So I could pay that online. At the same time, I augment my health insurance because that's sort of state basic health insurance with the EPS. You can go into a certain level of hospitals and be treated for your health ailments. Now, in some situations, this is very good, very effective, depending on what you pay, depending on where you are geographically and how you know how to play it. Now, you might want to augment this with what is called a prepagada, a prepaid insurance, health insurance policy. Now, it's a prepagada. Now, so I do that, and that costs me another, let's say, $80 a month, 175,000 pesos. Now, I do that through something called Colmedica, which is a private insurance company. They're known as Colmedica. It's Allianz is another one, you know, the big company. There are dozens of these. You can research them, talk to friends, find out who's the best, who makes the coverage. But if you're in Bogota, for example, and you're sick, there are a few hospitals that you will want to choose from. So there's the hospital, the Clinica El Country, the country, which is on the 84th with 15, between 15 and 16th in that area. Very good hospital. There's the Fundación Santa Fe in the north up by Usaquén, and again, another very good hospital. The Marley, which is all right. The Shio as well is good, which is near Suba. So these are the sort of, let's say, the top ones in Bogota. Now, if you pay top-end insurance with Allianz and, of course, Colmedica like mine, you will get access to these hospitals, which usually means you get the better doctors, the faster treatment, and, you know, looked after, and more coverage, of course. So, you know, you need to weigh these things up. You go with an EPS, and of course, if you don't have health insurance, these things can turn out incredibly costly if you end up going to or looking for, top-ranking hospitals in your situation. For example, when I was, I thought I was dying in Medellin when I had malaria and hemorrhagic dengue at the same time all those years ago. I just got on a plane and I went to Medellin because I know that to be very very good hospitals. Got in a taxi and went to the Clinica El Rosario, which is up on the hill in El Poblado. What isn't, I ask you. I went up there and I was privately seen to for a week, and my bill, and this is, we're going back a ways, 2007. I'll get it right sometime. In 2006, I was up there, and the care was phenomenal. My room was great. The people looking after me, everything was wonderful. Even the food was half decent. But a week in that, back in 2006, cost me, my memory serves me well, in the region of almost 2 million pesos. So even thinking back what that would be now and so on. I mean, but fortunately I had travel insurance back from England, which I could reclaim it from. So you need to know if these things are going to correspond. And of course that worked. Now, take last week's event. So my son was born in the Clinica El Country, so in a very good neonatal. I highly recommend it to any of you thinking of having a child here in Colombia. A very good neonatal unit there, and it was all covered. We got Allianz Insurance Agency would cover it all. We were to be, let's say, let into the hospital 2 days prior to the C-section, to the cesarean, because of pre-existing conditions that my wife suffered, from which my wife suffers. Now, I'm not going to go into those, but it was signed off on. This was signed off on by Allianz. We checked it up with them. They said it's absolutely fine. They understand. They're going to cover it. Then so we check into the hospital. We're there 24 hours later, so we've already spent a full day and a night and everything. 24 hours later, they call us to say, actually, they wouldn't be covering the 2 days prior to the cesarean because of we're there due to the pre-existing condition. Now, had we known this, had this been explained to us previously, we would have looked for something else. We probably would have gone through the EPS, which would have meant a lower ranking hospital, but for the 2 days prior to the C-section, we could have been looked after and my wife could have been, kept in good health in a different situation and not been charged the millions of pesos for 2 days stay. Now, in the country, in the neonatal unit, your rent, your room is costing more than 500,000 pesos a night. So this is, you know, you can tell that it's important to get these things right. It's important to know what's going on. Now, the C-section and the day afterwards, so the recovery day and a half afterwards, were all covered, because that's not with the pre-existing condition. But again, you know, so I had to have, on the Wednesday prior to the Thursday, the 9th of April birth, I had to be in 8 hours of meetings with insurance agents, the reference office of the hospital, who for hospital policy don't want, you know, to have to be in debt to an EPS who supposedly could then pay for them, you know, expensive medications needed. So they're then telling me well, you know, if your wife has any issues and your son have any issues after the birth, and you are here as independent clients, you are hospitalized but not under the auspices of Allianz, in the emergency unit in these hospitals, it's a flat 20 million fee straight up for each one of them. So you know, had anything happened during the birth, had my wife, you know, suffered any sort of hemorrhage, had my child suffered some sort of issue at the birth, it would have been a flat 40 million that I would have had to have paid straight up. Now, for those of you out there, that's around $20,000, maybe slightly less, you know, that I would have to pay straight away. And then any medications and anything else used would then be charged on top of those fees. So we had a line of doctors, a line of administration personnel, all, you know, parading through my wife's hospital room saying, we really, you know, insist that it's in your best interest to leave the hospital. We can make the reference to Nueva EPS, so the social security provider for my wife, and they will look, because this is going to be an emergency, they will look for a bed for your wife. Of course, there are a couple of things. We don't know if they're going to have the right gynecologist. We don't know if they're going to have the right hematologist. We don't know if they're going to have the right capacity. We don't know if they've got beds, you know, available. So in the case that they wouldn't have beds available, we could have played the odds, and the clinical country would have been obliged to have kept us there, you know, under sort of the moral ethics, and the EPS would have been obliged to pay. But at the same time, we were being pushed out. Fortunately, we took a stand and we said, we're not going. If there is an emergency, I'll mortgage my kidneys and we'll pay it. But at the same time, these 2 days of serious medical issues, the cesarean and the recovery, are covered by Allianz. So we're only paying for what was previous to that, although we shouldn't be paying for it because we were badly treated, because it was signed off by Allianz. And when I went to an office by Allianz, they said, no, there's been no denial of the services. It's all set. And then 24 hours later, they then denied it. So this is where the tutela comes in. I'm going to have to write letters to not only the president of Allianz, whether he reads them or not, not only to the clinical country, and say, you know, between the two of you, you made an error. And who suffers at the end? It's the patient. At the moment, so I've been billed almost 6 million pesos, which fortunately I have to pay it off. The EPS is supposed to pick up the bill for the expensive medications, which is around 3.5 million, which I'll get back, I suppose, in 6 months if the EPS, if I'm lucky, if the EPS comes through. I'm supposed to go and visit them and then talk about the issues. And then with the letters, hopefully I can then reclaim the other payments to the clinical country and the Allianz. But it's, you know, I'm sharing these almost incredibly personal issues with you out there, so you can know what you might, you know, be up against if you have a health issue here in Colombia. It can be outrageously expensive if you're looking for the top healthcare providers. It can be incredibly expensive and incredibly stressful. And well, perhaps the thing that left the worst taste in my mouth, I know they were only thinking on our behalf and in our best interests, but they really were trying to push us out. They really were saying you should go. But I have to share with you, I had to have a meeting with the reference office of the clinical country. So this is the people who are going to then refer us to a lesser ranking hospital, you know, to get us out. And we were behind closed doors, and we had, you know, a doctor there and the administration person there and everything else, and they said, listen, this is going to be the cost, this is going to be the issue, but we can tell you now that they're not going to have a blood specialist like that you need, and they're not going to, probably not going to have a gynecologist like you need. And so I said, well, you know, why would that then make me want to leave? Why would I then want to go to these hospitals? Well, you know, it's going to be 40 million, it's going to be this, it's going to be that. What happens? We can't say. We don't know. Fair enough. So I asked them to talk to me as doctors. I said, you know, as medical practitioners, I'm not asking what you would do. I'm asking for your professional opinion. I said, between you and me, I know that there are very good doctors in those hospitals. I know that they're very recommended. But are the facilities up to standard? Are they like this? The answer was no, of course. We knew that. And I said, listen, now if I put in the reference to be moved and they can't find a bed with Nueva EPS, the Social Security, do we get to stay here? Yes. But you're playing a jack, you know, you're rolling the dice to see if it works out or not. So what do I do? And then I said, well, you know, what's the likelihood of there being an emergency? And of course, the doctors can't make a prediction, but they said, you know, you'll want to stay here regardless. And that's all I needed to hear. You know, we're talking about the well-being of my wife and the well-being of my son. There's no price you can put on that. Yes, it would make life harder. Yes, I would have to make some serious amendments to my lifestyle, to my businesses, to everything. But when it comes down to it, what's the most important? So we stayed. There was no emergency. None whatsoever. The people from Allianz didn't bother us anymore. The people from administration didn't bother us anymore. We had won. We did take the gamble and we won. I was left with this bill for 6 million. I've paid it. I'm waiting for the refund. Again, this will be, you know, watch this space. If you're listening to me like 6 months down the line, I'll jump back in and say if I've been paid or not. But yes, we made it. So my little son was born at 10:18 in the morning on 9th of April, 2015, the anniversary of the Bogota. So we did not name him Jorge or Elisier after Gaitan. We named him James after my deceased brother. Rest in peace, little James. Anyway, at the time of speaking, he's still in the care unit because the little guy has not fully learned how to feed. But he's fine, he's in good health, he's in good hands, and we are incredibly happy. But, like as I say, this brings me back to last week's interview with Beverly Cadogan. We're going to have to follow the tertulia process, we're going to have to follow the letter writing process, which means we're going to have to write to everyone, take photocopies of everything, keep receipts of everything, which you should do anyway if you're in Colombia, and try and get some refund, or at least try and change the policy, because even the doctors in the reference office, even the doctors in our room said, you have been badly treated because you were allowed in as Allianz patients to the clinical country, and then 24 hours later, they said they wouldn't cover it. So how do we check this? Well, you go to Allianz and they say, well, because of the pre-existing condition, I said, yes, but it was signed off on. Had you said this at the beginning? But, of course, they're never going to lose. So it's about negotiating. We know this. So along my list of hatreds, I despise. There's the legal system in Colombia, because, of course, it's incredibly convoluted and expensive and just paperwork. Health insurance, of course, is now out there. Cell phone companies. Who else? I can't even remember anymore. The list goes on and on. But those are the three things that are up there. Obviously, some are of more importance than others. But I urge you, and those of you coming to Colombia, I urge you to do your investigation. You know, there are websites out there that can help you with this. I know that there was one out there called Anglo Info Colombia, and that has a lot of information on it about health and security and insurance and so on. Of course, you know, I used to have car insurance until I realized it really didn't cover me, but I know it is better because there's a state insurance as well that we have to pay. Of course, that doesn't, you know, benefit anyone at all, really. So anyway, you know, these things are really important facets of life here in Colombia, you know, and it's just part of the package. of being here, and I love being here, and I love that I now have an Anglo-Colombian little baby boy, and that he's going to grow up bilingual and hopefully get all the benefits that an Anglo-Colombian upbringing could bring him. But at the same time, it's quite distressing, the whole issue of how much everything is a negotiation, everything is just about surviving. You know, we just survive through the paperwork and through the different issues here. It's a bizarre situation to be in, especially when you, if you're, for example, from Canada and you have included healthcare, or from the England and you have NHS. But things just seem so much more clear. So that's really the show for today. I mean, that is it. I hope that I'm, you know, sort of elbowing or nudging some of you ahead into looking into healthcare and insurance and so on, because if you're thinking of it, really pay the top whack and get it all worked out. If you need, you know, there is a company that will organize it all for you called Correcol. Not cheap, but I go through them and my healthcare is very good. So that's today's show. Insurance, yeah, a bit of history. Jorge Elisier Gaitan, please look him up. Read about the history here in Colombia of the Bogotazo. Very important times. So we've had President Santos up there in Panama this last week. There has been the March for Peace here on the 9th as well, which was very well attended all over the country. And hopefully it's another message off to the guerrillas out there, is that Colombia is exhausted. Colombia needs a break from this constant warring, these constant problems. Colombia wants to strive forward to a more positive future. You know, you can get in touch with us, of course, through columbiacalling@gmail.com, our website, columbiacallingradio.com, and Twitter, Columbia Calling, Facebook, where we post all news about Columbia, articles, and so on and so forth. It's an interesting time to be here. If you're thinking of coming to travel, there's no better time than these months now, because we're after the Semana Santa rush and everybody's in low season, so you can find yourself a deal. I did see that Delta's now going to start flying more flights down into Colombia. I see that JetBlue, Spirit, you know, all going to Cartagena. You can come down for a weekend, imagine that, just to come down and chill out in great bars overlooking the ocean and so on. Yeah, and anyway, so yeah, read my pieces. You can find them at richardmccall.com. You can find other stuff at columbiacallingradio.com. And again, thank you to Beverly Callaghan last week for talking to me about the legal system, because it's, you know, sort of brought up a series, which I hope to continue. I hope to be interviewing security specialist Benjamin Hockman for coming weeks, perhaps people from Creative Mornings in Bogota. I've got some artists lined up. There are people out there wishing to be interviewed and who need to be interviewed, and I've got them lined up. But we'll see. We'll see in the coming weeks how it goes, because, as I said, I'm a little bit busy. And I'm not going to have visits to the house, of course, until we've, you know, make sure we're out of the woods with, in terms of my little son and his defenses and so on and so forth. Nothing risky at the moment. It's all just about these first few weeks, the first few months, you know, as we move forward in this. And I expect most of these shows in the future to take on a more personal slant, because that's the way it is. You know, people want to hear good stories. So I will keep them coming. I will keep them coming. And, you know, get in touch. And the emails I've had this week, a guy, Alex in Iowa, who was Alex Westendorf, something like that. He was adopted age 7 back in the 1980s. And he's coming down to Colombia this week for the first time since he was adopted to come and find the orphanage. Can you imagine that? So he was adopted and he's a resident of Iowa. I had another email there out there from someone saying, you know, basically declaring one of my interviewees, Marie Quinney, the Anglo-French transplant to Cali. That's honestlycali.com, and she's now his new hero, I think. So, you know, really, really positive emails coming through. You can get through, of course, again, columbiacalling@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening. I am flattered every week to receive your emails, to receive the numbers, staying steady around 6,000. And of course, you want to make me a really happy camper, go onto Amazon and look out or check up or buy the Kindle version or the print version of Was Gabo an Irishman? That's our new anthology of essays about the Macondian nature, the Garcia Marquez nature of Colombia. There are some great authors in there, new authors, established authors, and it is fun. And we will be at the end of the month in the Gabo Pavilion at Corferia. So if you want to meet us in person, that's where we'll be. That will be myself, Richard McCall, Caroline Doherty de Novoa, and Victoria Kellaway. Anyway, for now, I'm signing off. This is me, Richard McCall, for Columbia Calling here in Bogota. Have a great week, folks, and thank you for listening.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.